right, guys, welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. Gonna get another episode out. Hopefully I get it out tomorrow. If not, you guys will have to wait until next Monday. But I'm doing a little better. Anyway, yeah, back again with another podcast. This one's going to be a solo episode. It's going to be archery heavy. I'm going to talk a lot about archery. I'm going to talk specifically some things that I've learned in the last month and a half or so. I've been really down the rabbit hole with archery, which I always have been, but even more so this year. I've always loved archery. I've always loved shooting my bow. I've always loved bow hunting. I've always followed and really appreciated and liked competitive archery. But in talking to people probably in the last, I don't know, maybe 6 months, a year or so, I've said it often. I've even said it on this podcast several times, and I've asked several guests that I've had on the podcast, you know, what was it that made you better? Like, how did you actually get better? And there was a time in my life I felt like I actually was getting better. I was progressing at archery. I was getting more accurate, shooting better scores. And it was a time when I was shooting a lot of indoor archery, and I was really kind of like picking apart the details and focusing on getting better, and specifically had the goal of getting better. And I've kind of made that a priority this year. It's just something that I want to do. It's been really fun to have a, you know, kind of a renewed vigor for archery and trying to progress and learn. And I've really dove into some details, and I've learned quite a bit, I would say, just within the last month. And I'm hoping to pass that on to you guys, and hopefully it's something that you guys can use. Maybe it's not for everybody. I will get a little bit geeky and kind of in the weeds, and I think maybe for a lot of the stuff I'm talking about, you might need, you know, a bow press, or at least be willing to start to tinker a little bit with some of your own gear. And I think people should. I think generally, if you think you're going to want to continue to bow hunt, if you really like archery, you know, I would tell you to buy a press. You know, get into Last Chance Easy Press Green for $400. You know, establish a little spot in your home or your garage where you can work on your own equipment. And there's really nothing better than, you know, doing your own work. And then I think there's real gains to be had by playing with your equipment and really fine tuning it to you. I think you can start to see improvement, and it's been really fun within the last month or so to really see some improvement and just feel that renewed vigor for, you know, learning and for getting back into something that I have a passion for. So I'm going to talk a lot about that. I'm going to talk about some lessons that I've learned. Some of it is just going to be stuff I'll pass on from, you know, people that are far more qualified in that department than I am. And just maybe some insights that I've taken from things I've gleaned from them. I'll give those guys credit as I kind of work through it. The other part of the podcast, I want to run through some new archery gear picks. As you guys might know, the Archery Trade Association show just recently was in Indianapolis. I didn't get a chance to go to that. I've been in years past. It's one of my favorite shows. It's not all that big, and it's not a consumer show. It's for, you know, buyers essentially that run archery shops or have, you know, gear shops or online shops like we have. So it's not a consumer show, but, and it's not really all that big because the actual archery industry itself is not all that big per se. There's a lot of, you know, boutique-y type products and booths, and, you know, there's a lot of mom and pop, for lack of a better word, type shops or, you know, businesses within the archery industry, which I really like. It's really fun to just show up and see what people are coming up with. And I didn't get a chance to go. It is one of my favorite shows, but I was following along really closely with the various companies within the industry, kind of watching their Instagram posts, their social posts, and then also just like watching YouTube for the various channels that did get a chance to attend and, you know, put out some content based on what they saw. We did have a couple guys from the office, buyers within our shop go. Paul went out, Hunter went out, and I've talked to those guys a little bit. I talked to Paul quite a bit about what he saw. It's just fun to talk gear. So part of this podcast, the tail end of it, I want to include some of the new items that are within that realm of archery and bow hunting, and just kind of give you some thoughts and things that I'm looking to buy and try. A lot of that equipment I haven't had a chance to try yet. So it's not like I'm giving you a recommendation, but it's there are products that I noted and I looked at and I thought, man, I really want to give those a go. And hopefully I'll get a chance to. I don't have an endless budget by any means, but there's some things like arrows, veins, you know, maybe a release, something like that, that I will probably end up buying and trying, and hopefully, you know, I can pass on my feedback or kind of a review for it. So that's kind of going to be the format of the podcast this week. Before I get really started and dive down into it, I want to hit you with a promo. You guys can use my promo, which is Game Trail. That's GameTrail. If you want to sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account, and if you do that, we're going to give you $50 back in the Go Hunt gear shop. You can use that towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the shop. Also, now's a great time to sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account. With that promo code, you get access to all the draw odds, the application strategy articles. I just finished up the application strategy article for Arizona elk and antelope. Haven't done my application yet, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm trying to draw a tag with Neville in Arizona this year, and that'll be a fun hunt. Hopefully we hit pay dirt. We both get drawn out. We get a chance to go down there and hunt elk. I'm looking forward to this season. I'm really optimistic. I've got kind of a renewed vigor, I guess you might say, for aspects of hunting, specifically for archery hunting. And I'm just excited. So once those tags start coming in the mail and I start to see the results, I think it's just going to amplify kind of that passion and fire. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to it this year. You know, Wyoming, you've got Wyoming elk application for non-residents coming up on the 31st of this month. Again, haven't applied yet, but I've been talking to some guys in the office and we're thinking about making some plans. So get your applications in, make sure that you use Game Trail as your promo code and get yourself an insider account, do the research and get a chance to go hunting. Also, shout out to Matthews Archery as a sponsor of the podcast. I'm going to talk a lot about Matthews. I'm going to talk a lot about their bows, specifically a target bow. I think there are things that I've learned in setting up and starting to shoot a lot of target archery that I think you guys can extrapolate and use to help you going into the fall with your bow hunting setup. So shout out to Matthews. They make a really nice bow. I guess that's probably a good point to just dive in and start talking. So, and kind of give you the synopsis of why I've been thinking about archery so much and really fine tuning and kind of working away at, you know, the craft of archery, if you will. So for a while I've been wanting to get back into target archery. It's been a lot of years since I shot any target archery, specifically indoor archery. I think when most people talk about indoor, they're mostly referring to that Vegas style shoot where you've got, you know, a target face that's got three different dots on it. You shoot it from 20 yards. And typically what you do is you shoot three arrows per end for 10 ends. So it's a total of 30 arrows, total score of 300. You know, probably 12, 15 years ago, I would say, here our local club had a spot to shoot in the winter. So when the weather kind of tanked and got cold, they had some target butts that were in the basement of the high school. And we would get together, maybe 15, 20 guys, maybe one or two nights a week. We would go down there and we would shoot indoor. And we never really shot competitively. It wasn't like a league where we all kept score and that there was like a running tally. At least I don't remember what there being one. You know, some nights it seems like guys would put together $5 or $10 each person at the end of the night. We would do some shoot downs and, you know, one or two guys would walk away with a little bit of money. But for the most part, it was just getting together and, you know, having fun and shooting. I never really went to any state shoots or, you know, national shoots. You know, it was just something I did in the winter. But I really enjoyed it. And I've said on previous podcasts, as I've kind of talked about archery a little bit, I think really that time frame in my life was really when I started to see the most improvement. Shooting 20 yards indoors, it might seem monotonous. And I know a lot of guys are just like, that's just not for me. I don't love it. But I really do think that doing the same thing over and over and over, you can really start to fine tune and really hone in on, you know, what it feels like to make a good shot and then work on repeating that over and over. And I think that goes out and with you into the field when you're hunting. It helps you to be a better field archer, you know, whether you're shooting 40 or 60 or 80 yards. And like I said, that's really the time frame in my life as I look back, the point where I was actually felt like I was improving and getting better. And I want to improve. Like I said, I want to get better. I'm really focused on trying to become a better archer and a better bow hunter, because I really love it. It's just like a passion that I have. I was able to convince my buddies over at Matthews to get me a target bow, and I ended up getting a Matthews Title 38. It showed up to my house, I want to say maybe right before Christmas, which was like one of the best Christmas gifts ever. Pulling that thing out of the box was, you know, like a, being like a kid at Christmas. It was just fun to get that bow and, you know, look at it, see what kind of technology it's got, just feel it in your hand, how it's going to aim. And, you know, really kind of the potential and the possibilities of getting that thing put together and just going out and doing something that's a little outside my comfort zone, at least within the last 15 years or so. So it's a beautiful bow. I was really excited to get it. It is one of the new 2025 versions with the limb shift technology, which was really cool. And, you know, it was just fun to get. I probably should at this point, I know since people might be interested, I'll kind of talk about what it is that I'm planning on doing with it, how I've got it set up, the components that I've got on it. And then I want to dive into the lessons that I've learned in working with this brand new title. So it is set up in Bowhunter Freestyle. If you guys are familiar with target archery or competitive archery at all, there's typically various classes. Probably the most popular class would be freestyle, which is essentially guys are able to use long stabilizers. So you see a lot of the professionals that are shooting that class shooting, you know, 30 inch front bars. They might be shooting anywhere from, you know, 6 to 20+ ounces on the front bar. Typically guys are shooting a back bar or, you know, two back bars on their target bows. You know, they're probably shooting a 15 inch back bar with a lot of weight on it. Basically they're building those bows out to be, you know, relatively heavy, definitely heavier than your typical hunting bow, to try to slow that aim down and be able to really focus and aim really well in the middle of the dot and then execute a shot. They're also using target sights, so it's definitely a more expensive sight. It's got micro adjustments in the vertical travel. Also, you know, your horizontal travel, your gang adjustment, micro. You've also, most guys are probably shooting a magnified lens in their scope. A lot of them are shooting a dot on that lens versus a pin. It's just a much more sophisticated setup for freestyle. And then you've got Bowhunter Freestyle, and there's some rules, stipulations in Bowhunter Freestyle. Kind of the setup for those, you can't have a stabilizer on the front that is over 12 inches. That's including the weight from the front of the riser. You can shoot any length of back bar that you want, any amount of weight. You cannot shoot a magnified lens in your sight. You can shoot a single pin in a Vegas style shoot indoor. But it's just kind of a slimmed down version of a freestyle setup. And that's kind of where I've decided I'm going to focus and try to work on this year, primarily because I can't really afford at this point to get into a full target setup. So the target sights are expensive. You know, I priced one out the other day. I think it was $800+ just to get into a target sight. You know, target bars, those long 30 inch bars, they're pretty expensive. So I just don't have the money right now really to get into it. At some point I would really like to, just because I think it would be fun to play in that world. But I've decided that for this year, what I want to try to do is shoot Bowhunter Freestyle. So I set my bow up in that manner. So currently I've got a 10 inch Ramrod front stabilizer bar. I think I've got about 7 ounces on the front. I've got a 12 inch Ramrod back stabilizer bar with, I think, about 15 ounces currently. I've got a Shrewd Matthews Atlas back bar bracket, which is what I've got that back bar mounted on. For a sight, I don't have a lot of single pin sights around. All the hunting sights that I've got are five pin. I've got some three pin sights. But really I was looking for a single pin to shoot indoor with. And really the only one that I had available to me was a Excel Landslide with a single pin scope. And it's a 41 millimeter scope with a single 19 pin in the middle. So I threw that on the bow and kind of sighted it in, set it up. I like it. I don't love it. You know, like I said, at some point I would really like to get into a much more technical target style sight. I've got just a regular peep in this bow. It's a Radical Archery Designs 1/8 inch peep. I know that a lot of target shooters shoot a much smaller aperture. It really kind of helps them fine tune and be a little bit more accurate when they're shooting spots. I need enough light that I can still see my pin and my right eye isn't the best. And I can talk a little bit about that later on the podcast. I can talk about peeps. I want to talk about peep height, and I also want to talk about a new product from Hamsky, new peeps for them, and maybe looking at a verifier to help me clear up that pin. But right now, I've just got an 1/8 inch Radical Archery Design. It's your basic peep that you can pick up at most archery shops. So that's the peep set I've got in it. For rest, I had, and I've not been using it, but I had a Hamsky Trinity limb-driven rest, which is a nice rest. I see a lot of guys shooting it for target archery. It's a drop-away rest. I did get a target conversion kit for that rest, which essentially allows me to adjust the angle of the blade. And I've got the target-style blade on that rest. And I got that thing set up. I got it, tuned in, and it was a relatively easy process, and it's shooting pretty decent. As far as the bow goes, I didn't know exactly what to order because I know a lot of guys that are shooting indoor spots, they might be shooting 55 or 60 pounds. There are a few guys out there I know that really like the added holding weight and just the draw weight, and they're shooting some 70 pounds even for indoor. But I think most guys are probably shooting 60 pounds. I kind of wanted to be able to use it maybe for some outdoor like 3D type stuff if I ever really got into it. So I kind of split the difference and I went with a 65 pound mod, 30 inch draw length, and let off was something that I thought a lot about because you can get this title in a 70% let off, a 75% let off, and an 80% let off. So when I ordered the bow, I ordered it with 75% let off, and I got it and I shot it and I liked it and it holds nice. That little extra bit of added holding weight gives you a little more something to pull into, but kind of what I've established or learned about myself is that maybe my shot is a little bit more static than I thought. Maybe I'm not used to really pulling into a back wall and pulling against a lot of weight that is out on the end of my stabilizer bars. And there were times it felt like I'd get a little bit sloppy, maybe, I would start to shake. I never really had it feel like it was going to jump out of my hand, but I just wasn't shooting it as well as I thought. So I ended up buying a couple of different mods. I ended up buying a 80% mod and a 30 inch draw, again, 65 pounds. And I also ended up buying a 75% let off 30.5 inch draw just because I wanted to play a little bit with draw length. I ultimately ended up liking the 80% let off. I am not holding as much weight on the end of my stabilizer bars as a lot of those guys are. So there's a little bit, it's probably a little less critical as far as the amount of holding weight on that bow. But I kind of like the 80%. That's what I've been shooting. It seems to shoot the best and hold the best. And I'm still learning. I'm still tinkering, which is what the rest of this podcast is going to be about, because I felt like I have learned quite a bit in the last month. I've had some epiphanies, if you will. So I want to dive into those. I guess kind of to set it up, when I was shooting maybe 12, 15 years ago, I was shooting indoor, and I was thinking about it as I was starting to get into it. I was kind of thinking about my scores and what I used to shoot. And I felt like, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I felt like I typically shot high 80s, low 90s with Bowhunter freestyle setup. So I remember thinking I should be able to get this target bow set up. I should be able to shoot, you know, 290 to maybe 295, somewhere in that neighborhood. I'm not shooting 300s with that setup. I never remember shooting 300s back when I was shooting, you know, indoor with that bow hunter freestyle setup. So I didn't expect to just start cleaning scores and targets, but I did think I was probably going to end up landing somewhere in that low 290s, which is kind of my expectation. So I got the bow set up and felt pretty good. It was aiming pretty good. Took it out and started shooting some scores, just shooting some games. And I don't have a place to shoot indoor here anymore. Basically what I was doing, I was running up to my local archery range, which is outdoors, a little bit of wind, and just putting a target face on a regular target butt outside and just shooting. It's a little bit cold. But that's what I started doing. And I noticed pretty quick that I was not even close to my expectations. Like I was shooting, you know, mid 270s. I shot a few games where I was like 283, 285, which isn't the worst. It's not terrible, but it definitely wasn't meeting my expectations for what I thought I was as an archer and a shot. And I was a little bit deflated. I was kind of bummed out and shot several days that way and just kind of shot the similar types of scores, getting frustrated. So I started thinking a lot about aim and how do I make this thing more accurate? I was thinking, you know, I don't know that I just felt like I should be shooting better. Like I feel like I have the ability to. So I started thinking about trying to get the bow to fit me better, get it in a position, however that may be, whether it's draw length or let off or, you know, all these little factors. How can I get this thing to shoot better? So I started doing a lot of research. I started doing a lot of reading. I started thinking about the individual aspects of what makes a bow aim and makes it more accurate. I started thinking about what I already know. Maybe what are some holes? What are some things that I haven't considered? And I don't know exactly how this came to me. I'm trying to remember, but one night I just started thinking about grip. And grip is like one of the most elementary aspects of shooting a bow. It's like the first step in most people's process, or maybe the second, maybe setting your feet is the first, but your grip is certainly right near to the top of the process. I've always felt like I had a good grip in my bow. It felt comfortable. It felt repeatable. I've never had any issues whatsoever tuning a bow, getting good clean paper tears through paper when I set up a bow. So I've always felt pretty good about my grip. I think the thing that maybe got me thinking about it is I started looking at professionals. So I started looking at guys like Kyle Douglas and, you know, Stefan Hansen, you know, guys that shoot Matthews bows. That's what I have as a title. So I wanted to kind of go down that rabbit hole first and kind of see what they're doing as far as grip. And I noticed that those guys are mostly shooting side plates, the Matthews side plates on their both their hunting bows and their target bows. You know, Levi Morgan, I was looking at him and his grip. He's shooting the side plates. He typically, sometimes he wraps it. It looks like sometimes he just lays a piece of like skateboard grip tape down the back of the riser to kind of let his palm set in. Anyway, so I started thinking about that. And I know for me over the years, one of the first things that I've always done, in fact, somebody made a comment on YouTube recently, they said Matthews makes new grips, which they did this year in 2025. They've got the new Engage grip and they've got some other new grips, including the taper and the contour. They're still doing side plates, but somebody made a comment on a YouTube video that I'd done with the bow. They said, you know, Matthews comes out with new grips, ... Trail immediately rips grip off completely and wraps it in tennis racket tape. And they're not wrong. That's what I've done, because to me, that's what felt the most comfortable to me. I liked getting up into the grip with kind of the palm of my hand, if you will. I like to get up into it. I felt like I could get close to the riser with my pointer finger, kind of get up into that grip. And I felt like it was really repeatable and comfortable. But I started thinking about those guys. None of them are doing that. They're all pretty much using the side plates. And so one night I thought, man, I'm going to rip the tennis racket tape off my bow grip. I'm going to put the side plates back on. And I'm just going to see how it feels. I'm going to see what kind of position it puts my hand into. So I did that, put the side plates back on, and you know, whether you're using the side plates or any of the new engage grips, they all have kind of the same profile, that very similar curvature, if you will, specifically to your pointer finger side of your hand, and then also on the inside of the riser where your thumb kind of sits. And put the side plates on. You know, I wrapped it in tape around those side plates again, just because I like the way that feels, and I like the fact that it kind of holds those side plates in. And put my hand in the grip, and immediately I was like, man, this feels really uncomfortable. It feels like it changes the angle and really the position of the grip from what I have been doing and what's been comfortable. It just didn't feel comfortable to me. But I got thinking, there's got to be a reason that they designed the grip this way. There also has to be a reason that all these professional archers that I'm watching on YouTube and I'm looking at their social media, there's got to be a reason that they continue to use this profile. And, you know, obviously it's repeatable for them. And put my hand in the grip, like I said, it definitely changed. And what I noticed first and foremost is it kind of pushed my hand into the same position, which I guess is the point of any bow grip. So there was really no inconsistencies in where it ended up kind of forcing or pushing my hand into the grip, but it did kind of move the grip more, I would say more central into my palm. And it kind of changed the angle of my knuckles. So if you were to hold your bow out in your bow hand and you were to look at the back of your knuckles there, kind of the angle, typically my angle has been pretty, it's been a little bit more horizontal, I guess you might say. So it might, instead of being like a 45 degree angle, you know, it might be a little bit higher, or it might be at a 45, but using the Matthews grips, the side plates, or even their engage grip, it kind of forces my grip into a little steeper angle. So it might be like 40 degrees or 35 degrees. It's a little bit steeper, meaning it kind of pushes more into the center of my palm. I've always read, I've watched a lot of tutorials, whether they're on, you know, YouTube or whatever it might be. I've read books. I've always kind of read that you don't want your grip to cross that lifeline in your palm. So if you look at your palm, you've got kind of that half circle lifeline that runs inside your thumb there. And I've always been told, like, you don't want your grip to, you know, cross that lifeline. And I think I took it so much to heart that I was kind of pushing that grip more to the pad of my thumb than I was to that lifeline in kind of a center part of my hand. So I grip the bow and I get into it, I draw it back, and it doesn't feel comfortable at all. But I decide I'm going to stick with it. I decide I'm going to try to repeat that grip over and over, and I'm just going to start shooting some arrows and see how it goes. So I did it for probably 4 or 5 days, and it started to get a little bit more comfortable, started to feel a little bit better in my hand. It's definitely, in my opinion, it's repeatable. It felt like the alignment was really good. It felt like it was in the same spot every single time, but it just wasn't feeling quite comfortable. Over the days of shooting, and I started shooting scores, I started shooting Vegas faces and keeping score and everything. Something that I did notice relatively quick is that I started, my arrow started coming more into the center. So I was getting less left and right misses and movement in my impact points. And it did feel like my arrows were kind of moving closer into the center, specific to my left and rights. I would still have some misses, maybe high or low, but it definitely felt like my left and right started to shrink right in. And it took me probably a week and a half, 2 weeks, to where it felt like when I gripped the bow, I would get right into it and it felt more comfortable. And pretty soon I was starting to have a lot more fun because I was getting a lot less left and right misses. And my scores were starting to improve a little bit, starting to do better, and it was starting to feel comfortable and more repeatable, to the point where I took my hunting bow, took tennis racket tape off of that, put another set of side plates on that, wrapped it back up, and going forward, that's where I'm going to go with my hunting bow. So in essence, what I've done is I've changed my bow grip. And I've changed it from probably what I've been doing for close to 20, 25 years. You know, maybe it's changed a little bit over the years because some of the old grips were just shaped differently. But I've definitely changed my grip over what I have been doing for probably the last 10 years, I would say. And grip is something that, like I said, most people, I think they find their grip, it's something that they get comfortable with and they just repeat it and they do it. So you get a new bow, you just go back to your old way that you grip your bow and you get into it, you tune to it, and you just start going at it. Kind of what this has taught me is that maybe every bow has a little bit difference in how it likes to be gripped. Maybe changing your grip can be something that can yield a better aim, a better hold, and the end result is better accuracy and scores downrange. And it was kind of a tough pill to swallow after all these years of shooting a bow, even, you know, teaching people or doing YouTube videos via our channel on how you should grip a bow. You know, I've made a change to my grip, and I really think it's helped with my scores. So I would say, don't be afraid to evaluate even the littlest parts of your shot process. Evaluate your grip. Look at it. See how it feels. Try a different grip. Try a different grip and shoot for score. See if your scores are better. See if your aim is better. I've been using and doing a lot of aiming drills in my basement in conjunction with shooting. I've got about 12 yards here, and you know, I'll just grab the bow. I'll change something slightly. Draw the bow back, aim, and just see how it aims and kind of take inventory of it and keep track of over time and just try to improve the way the bow feels and aims. And I think there's all kinds of little things, whether it's your grip, your draw length, whatever it might be, that can probably help you be more accurate, more repeatable. And accuracy is really all about repeatability. So try that. Play with your grip. That's definitely been a lesson that I've learned in this last couple of weeks. I've also done some other things, which I'm going to be talking about here in a little bit and kind of how I came across those. So the next thing I would jump into, actually, maybe I'll run through this real quick. So people ask, how do you find a new archer? Maybe somebody that really hasn't gotten into archery. You know, my 12-year-old right now, he's starting to get a little bit more into shooting. I've been talking to him about grip, you know, when I see him grab the bow and he basically kind of puts a death grip on it. I'm trying to talk him through the process of how to get a grip. So here's the advice I would give you right now if you're looking to try to, you know, play with your grip or what your grip might look like. Essentially, what I would tell people, telling my kid right now, take your bow arm, hold it out, hold your arm out. Tip your hand back like you were going to tell somebody to stop, and then just tip your fingers out, you know, tip them out to maybe like a 40, 45 degree angle, and then get into your grip. You want your pointer finger, your bird finger, and then maybe even your ring finger to just like lightly rest on the front of the riser. As I watch a lot of pro archers, I would say that a lot of them are shooting what I call a low wrist grip, meaning that they're allowing that grip to run all the way down almost to the base of their palm. So their wrist is kind of bent back. They've got a lot of contact in their palm with their grip. I think that's more repeatable, versus a high wrist, which would be where you have very little bend in your wrist back towards your body. You're basically keeping your wrist straight. You're using that webbing between your pointer finger and your thumb to kind of hold and cradle the bow. To me, as I watch a lot of guys, it seems like there must be a little bit more inconsistency in gripping a bow that way. So I think a low, you know, medium to low wrist grip is probably preferred. And that's what I see most professional archers doing. So that's how I tell people to how to play with their grip, or at least how they should get started into gripping a bow. Just stick your hand out, turn your hand up like you're saying stop, tip that to about a 45 degree angle, get your hand up into the grip, lightly rest those fingers, let them be kind of dead, let that grip be dead in your palm, and find that straight arm alignment as you go, and play with it. But I probably thought I should run through that, but grip, man, play with your grip, try some things, don't be afraid to tinker with it. The next thing I wanted to talk about, I've been doing a lot of research, a lot of reading, a lot of watching YouTube, and it's been kind of a paradigm shift for me in how I set up a bow and how I deal with a bow. So I was watching one night on Facebook and I came across a post from Paige Pierce. So Paige Pierce, for those of you that may not be aware, she's a professional archer, somewhat of a phenom, came up, started shooting at a very young age. She's been kind of at the top of that game as far as competitive archery, for females. And, she's a really good teacher in my opinion. And I don't know why she goes out of her way, probably just the goodness of her heart to just put this information out there that she's learned, but she puts it in a really, digestible format. Like she's a really good coach in my opinion. And I came across a series of videos that she's done recently. She put them out on her her Facebook page. And I've been going through those and really listening to her. So most of this is from Paige. I'm not going to like dive into the individual details because she gets really detailed and there's some really awesome information. I would encourage you guys jump over to her page and, watch her videos and just see what it is that she says that might be able to help you. But really like from a 30,000 foot view, she said something that kind of was a paradigm shift for me. And it's a change in the way I'm looking at setting up my bow. So kind of what she said that resonated with me was she basically said she builds out a bow from the start so that that thing aims the best. Then she tunes from there. And for me, and I think for a lot of people, if you guys go to a pro shop and you get your bow set up, I think myself included, the goal is to tune the bow. So you tune the bow, and then post-tune, you get that thing to shoot clean holes through paper from maybe 6 feet and then 7-8 yards. Once you achieve that, I think a lot of us just live with how the bow is set up because it's in tune, right? I've done this a bunch of times. Typically, my process has been, I'll get a brand new bow, I'll pull it out of the box, put the components on it. I will measure exactly halfway between each axle. That's where I've started my knock point and my D-loop. I'll then set the rest at a 90 degrees so the arrow runs at a 90 degree to the bowstring. I'll make sure that my cams are perfectly timed so that the draw stops are rolling over, hitting the cables at the exact same time. So those are, dead nuts. I'll set my rest at 13/16 from the riser. And then, with the older Matthews bows, I would use the top hat kits to shim the cams either left or right to work out my left and right tears. With the new bows, you've got that limb shift technology. So I would use that to help me paper tune my left and rights. Draw length, D-loop length, pretty much standard. So if I ordered a bow from Matthews and a 30-inch draw, I would shoot that bow. My loop length, I haven't really changed over the years, haven't played a ton with it. I'd have a loop length that I like, that I've shot, seems to do okay for me. Basically what I've done is I've set my bow up, I've tuned it, which I'm proficient at tuning a bow. If you go to a pro shop, those guys are proficient in tuning your bows and, getting you out the door with a bow that has a relatively good paper tear. And then a lot of us, I think what we do is we just go out and we start shooting. And I think there's not really anything wrong with that per se, but I do think after listening to Paige talk, I think we're probably leaving some bread on the table, if you will, in terms of accuracy and forgiveness. What she preached, which I thought was really cool, was she basically builds her bow out to aim the very best. Then she tunes. So she used her rest to essentially tune, the rest height, to tune the bow after she's got that bow in a position completely built out to where it aims the best. So the individual aspects, the things that she talks about are things like draw length. So playing with your draw length. You know, you can put twists in or take them out of your cables. Same with your string. I don't do a lot with my string, but you can make incremental small changes to your overall draw length to your bow. I would suggest playing with that. See what aims the best. Same with your D-loop length. Play around with your D-loop length. See what aims the best. Something that she talked about that I thought was really interesting, I hadn't put much thought into, is actually the location of her D-loop as far as how far up or down it is on her string. In the one video, I think she has her husband there. She has him pull a bow back, and she shows him pulling it back with a D-loop that's slightly higher, a D-loop that's slightly lower, and she gives you a visual of what that bow does, the riser, based on where the D-loop and the knocking point is on the string. And the thing I thought was interesting about that was she says, you know, if you're somebody that kind of suffers from those dip bang shots, which are those shots where it feels like your pin is dipping out the bottom, it's dipping out the bottom, you're having a hard time kind of keeping it up in the dot. And then all of a sudden, you know, your bow will fire and you kind of drop one out the bottom. She talks about how you might be able to alleviate that by moving your D loop and your knocking point up the string by just being able to leverage slightly the way you hold the bow and the way the D loop sits on your string, the way everything is in alignment, basically, when you come to full draw and anchor. So that was really interesting to me. One thing that she also talked about was peep height. You know, for me, setting my peep height, and I would bet for a lot of you, what happens is you go to a pro shop, you get your bow set up, you get a peep in it, you got your D-loop on. The technician that works there will probably have you pull your bow back with your eyes closed. You'll find your anchor point string to the tip of your nose, you know, jawline with your knuckles, or you know, maybe you're like Cam and you put your finger behind your ear and you kind of find your anchor point. And then what they'll have you do is open up your eye. You open up your eye, you look through your peep sight, and essentially that peep sight should be the right height so that you can look through it. You can align the ring on your sight housing up together perfectly. And most of the time they're going to do it indoors in their shop. And a lot of shops have about 20 yards. So most of you are probably setting your peep height based on, you know, a 20 yard target inside a shop. Now I've done pretty much the same process. I have done it slightly different in that I like to set my peep height on, you know, my hunting bow outside at a further distance. So I usually set my peep height based on a target that's sitting out there maybe 40 to 60 yards, because that's most often the types of shots that I'm going to get in the field. So that's how I've set my peep height. Now I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. So, you know, a target bow like this, where I'm going to be shooting at 20 yards, I think it makes really good sense to set my peep height at 20 yards, obviously. But one thing she talked about was how important peep height is to how well the bow aims and how accurate it might ultimately be. I've heard Kyle Douglas talk about that as well. I remember last year when we had him on the podcast, he said something similar, but it didn't really register with me to the point where I started playing with the peep height. But this new title, I started playing with the peep height and I started paying attention to a factor, which is how well it aimed, which I haven't really done before. So I would encourage you to think about peep height. Think about how it impacts the way that it holds, the way it helps you find your anchor point, and then, you know, play with it a little bit. And I'm not saying a lot. I mean, it is micro. It is very small amounts, but I definitely think it's worth exploring. So that was a really interesting take home from Paige. God, what else? I'm trying to remember before I move on. I think those were kind of the big take homes that I got from her. Draw length, like I said, draw weight, holding weight, that's worth playing with. Peep height, definitely worth playing with. Stabilizers, you know, I think you can play with those. Definitely angles, left to right, and also down, the amount of weight you put on the front bar, the amount of weight you put on the back bar. Play with all that, do all that to get the best available, the best possible aim for you. Then tune. Use your rest to help you tune. So most cases, you're going to be using the height of your rest to kind of tune out your up and down tear. Matthew's bow, you can use that limb shift technology to tune out any left and rights, but really build that bow out so that it aims the best. It's the most forgiving, then tune. So for me, that was a paradigm shift. I haven't really thought about it in that manner. Kind of before I move on from that, I guess I would say the last thing I would say, I've been this way for a lot of years. I've had almost a little bit of OCD about setting my bows up. I wanted the cams to be perfectly timed, which I still think, you know, it makes sense. She talks a little bit about how maybe you might want one cam or the other to hit slightly in advance of the other, and that you can use that to help the bow aim better. I knew that. I've never really considered it in a real way or tried it prior to maybe like the last month, because this OCD in me was like, both cams have to hit the same time. They just have to. My arrow has to run through the center of the burger hole. You know, the arrow has to be 90 degrees from the string. All those little things that I felt like this is the way that it has to be. And it's like this little OCD thing in me. It like has to be perfect. And I'm probably not using that term OCD properly. I'm sure it's not true OCD, but I just had these things about my bow setup. Like I just wanted them absolutely perfect. And I think in reality, what is that gaining me if the bow doesn't aim and shoot as well as I need it to, and it's not as forgiving as it needs to be? It really isn't getting me anywhere. And I'm going to have to let go of some of those things if I find some of these that are going to help me be more accurate, which is the goal. I remember at one point in the video, she said, I don't really care where my arrow runs in relation to the burger hole, as long as it's somewhere relatively close. Maybe it runs higher in the burger hole or lower in the burger hole. I don't really care. What I'm after, first and foremost, is accuracy. And I want that bow to hold dead nuts in the middle, and I want to be able to execute a shot and hit middle. And that's what I want. So I'm going to have to get rid of some of these little things that I've always thought and held on to for dear life. So I just wanted to make that point. I thought it was super interesting. And like I said, I encourage you, jump over to her page and watch her Facebook videos. She can do a much better job at actually explaining the individual details of things that you can do to help you. And everybody's different on what they might be struggling with or trying to do. She's probably got an answer for you. And I would bet if you reached out, she'd probably respond. But check that out. Another thing that I've been kind of working on, and I learned from George Riles. So George Riles is an archery coach. I've brought him up previously in the past. I think the guy is just, I think he's one of the best content producers in terms of archery coaching out there. I saw he does this thing called Thing a Week, which is a video he does on YouTube for Last Chance Archery. I believe it's on their channel. And the last one that I watched, he was talking about setting your shoulders for success. And he talks about setting your bow arm shoulder, kind of relaxing it back in the pocket, and then also setting your draw arm shoulder, and kind of what that position should look like and feel like. And that helped me a lot. I didn't feel like I really necessarily had a problem with it, but it was really good to go back and watch that entire video, familiarize myself with it, hear his thoughts on where he thinks your shoulders should be set and feel like. And I've been trying to do that and repeat it. And I think it's helped me quite a bit. So check that video out. Like I said, it's on Last Chance Archery's YouTube page, and check out anything George Riles does. I think if that guy's talking and you're into bow hunting, you're into shooting a bow, you should be listening. So with that, those are kind of my take homes for now, things that I've learned. I am happy to report my scores are getting better. So I shot two games yesterday morning. I've been trying to shoot about four games a day. So what is that? 120 arrows at least. And then I'm probably shooting another, I would say 50 or so, where I'm just shooting, like I'm working on some individual aspect of my shot process. A lot of those I'm shooting in my basement. I did get an indoor range kind of set up in my house. So I figured out that if I open my kitchen door that goes into my garage and I put my target kind of in the very back corner of the garage, I can stand in the corner of my kitchen and I can shoot through that open door and the yardage is 19 and a half yards. So it's pretty good. It's not exactly 20, but it's damn close. So I've been doing that. So as soon as I drop my kids off at school in the morning, I'll try to shoot two games. And then I've been trying to shoot two games in the evening when everybody's kind of out and about at various activities or practices. So I'm getting a bunch of more arrows and I'm really happy. So my scores have gone up. I shot yesterday morning two games. The first game I shot a 292. Second game I shot a 295, which is probably the highest score I can remember shooting in a really long time. Maybe ever, to be honest. I've never shot a perfect 300, which is on my goal. It's like a New Year's resolution that I've got for 2025. I see all you guys out there posting these perfect 300s. I think it's awesome. Super cool. I've never shot a bow hunter freestyle perfect 300. So that is on my agenda. That's my goal for this year, as well as just becoming more accurate. And then also, you know, I've got some goals when it comes to hunting in the woods this fall. So that kind of wraps up some things I've learned with target archery. Hopefully that helps you guys. You know, if you got other things that you're working on, I'd love to hear about it. If you have anything that's like helped you, if you got questions, don't hesitate. You guys can reach out to me. I'd be more than happy to answer a DM or an email. Okay. So now I'm going to jump into kind of the ATA, the gear side of this. I love archery equipment and tackle. And I want to talk about some of the things that I've seen either at the show, the videos I've watched from the show, or just new gear pieces that I've kind of picked up on in my quest to try to be a better target archer. So the first little category are new vanes. So I'm constantly, seems like every year, I'm kind of evaluating what's out there in terms of vanes. I'm always thinking about hunting for the most part. And for the last several years, I've been using the Boning Heat Vanes. And I've been using those in a four fletch configuration. I feel like they do a really good job at stabilizing even a fixed blade head, definitely mechanical heads, which is what I've been shooting those severs. They're a really stiff vane. They're low profile, so they've been really quiet. They've been really durable, actually. I feel like they rebound if you shoot them into a target. They don't hold like a crinkle in the vane. So I've had really good luck with them, and I really like those vanes, but I am always kind of looking and seeing what's out there. So there's a couple of vanes that I saw pop up recently, one of them being the Flex Fletch Quad X. I'm going to say that again. The Flex Fletch Quad X. A lot of years ago, a lot of the guys locally here, they all shot Flex Fletch vanes. It was just kind of a standard. Everybody always shot those. I know this year when I was at the TAC event in Salt Lake, I ran into a friend of mine, Henry Bass, who I've mentioned him before on podcast. He's a really good archer. I have a lot of respect for him in that realm. And I just asked him, what are you shooting for vanes, you know, for hunting and target? And he didn't skip a beat. He just said, I'm shooting Flex Fletch. And I haven't really shot those in a lot of years, and I haven't really even put a lot of time looking into them, but I just saw this pop up the other day. So this Flex Fletch Quad X, they suggest that you shoot it in a four fletch configuration. It's what they call a mid profile. Each one weighs 5 grains a piece. They're 0.42 inches tall and they measure 2.2 inches long. They look a little strange. So they look just like elliptical almost. So there's not like any tapering in the front part of the vein. It just looks like kind of a half elliptical vein. They look kind of interesting, kind of unique. They are super light. So 5 grains per vein, that's lighter than a lot of other veins that are out there. Shooting it in a four fletch, I like that configuration. So that's definitely a vein I'm interested in buying and trying. I need to get some of those on order. While I was looking at their page, I also noticed, and then also I'm talking to Henry, he was shooting the Flex Fletch Pro 2.5. So that vein is 5.6 grains per vein. It's a little bit taller. It's 0.47 inches tall, and it's a little bit longer. It's 2.5 inches, and it's a shield cut. So it's got that little bit of a shield cut in the back end of the vein. I think that vein looks really interesting. Both of those veins should be really quiet. I always had good adhesion with those flex fletch veins when I used to shoot them a long time ago. So both of those veins are definitely on the list. I want to buy and try and kind of tinker with those. Another vein that has popped up that I think looks interesting is the boning alpha vein. So the alpha vein is kind of designed to, according to their marketing packet, combine stealth, speed, torque. It's made of a different material than a lot of their veins that they use. So it's an AR 1250 material, which they say is the stiffest, quietest that they produce at boning. It'd be interesting to see if those are as stiff as the heat veins, because those are really stiff veins. It's got kind of a unique looking profile to it. They say the advanced torque apex, they call it, which is the position on the vein providing peak rotational torque, combined with a gradual taper to the tail of the vein, which creates the optimal balance and spin and stealth. So these veins, looking at them and based on the material that they're using being stiff, they should be really, really quiet. There should be less noise, less flutter in those veins because they're so stiff. They're a little bit low profile, meaning that you could shoot those either in a four fletch or a three fletch configuration. I am interested in buying and trying these in a three fletch configuration to see if they've got enough drag that they can actually stabilize a fixed blade broadhead. I don't love fletching arrows. I just don't. It takes forever. So if I can fletch with three versus four, I would rather do that, as long as I don't feel like I'm losing feet per second, or I'm losing accuracy, or I can't stabilize, you know, a fixed blade broadhead. I don't shoot fixed blade broadheads. I haven't for a few years. I'm shooting mechanicals, but I feel like if any arrow vein configuration can stabilize and accurately shoot a fixed blade head, it's going to do really, really well with a mechanical head. Specs on this alpha vein from boning, it's 8.5 grains, so it is a little bit heavier. You know, if you got that in a four fletch configuration, you may be adding more weight to the back of your arrow than you might want. It is 2.8 inches long. It is 0.45 inches tall. But that's a vein I'm interested in. I'm definitely going to buy some of those and try them. If you guys are using them out there, I know that you are, some of you are, but if you're listening to my podcast and you're using them, I'd love to hear what you guys think about them. I'd love to hear your thoughts after using them. Another vein that popped up that I think is interesting is the AAE Air Razor 23. Last year, AAE came out with the Air Razor veins. I bought some of the 26s and tried those in a three fletch configuration. The 26s are 2.6 inches long. They are taller, so they're a half inch tall. They're a little bit longer, a little bit taller than what I liked. Although in a three fletch with some helical on them, they did stabilize and fly really well. It's definitely a more quiet material versus some of the Stealth or Stealth Max materials that they've used on their other veins. It's a lot stiffer, a lot quieter, in my opinion. I felt like they rebound pretty good if you shoot it into a target. But these new 23s, I think, are even more interesting because they're even more low profile. So they're pretty slim. So they're a 0.38 height. They're 2.3 inches long, and they're definitely lighter, only weighing 4.8 grains per vein. So I'm thinking that Air Razor 23 in a four fletch configuration with a mechanical head, a little bit of helical on it, that might be like a super quiet, really accurate setup. So I definitely want to buy and try some of those veins. That's kind of it for veins. I'm always looking. If you guys have other veins out there that you've come across that you think would be good fits, reach out to me. I'd love to try them out. Good thing about veins is you're not out, you know, $800 like you might be on a Target site or something. You can buy and try some veins and tinker with those relatively cheap. So it's always fun to try to find and try a new vein, maybe give you a little bit of an edge. Along with veins, I want to talk about a couple arrows. I've noted these arrows on past podcasts. These seem to be the most interesting new arrows for 2025, in my opinion, and kind of the biggest buzz, and that is the Easton 5.0, so the Easton 5, and then the Victory HLR. Both of those arrows kind of are in the exact same vein, if you will. So they're a 204 diameter arrow. They're kind of in between a 246, which is something like a gold tip pro hunter. And then, you know, the micro, the 166s, which is the real skinny hunting shafts. They're kind of an in-betweener. The biggest issue with 204 diameter arrows in the past has been that they were a little bit heavy. So like the Kinetic Chaos from Gold Tip, even the Easton Axis 5mm, they were a little more grains per inch than a lot of guys were wanting to use. And I think people were looking for a 204 diameter arrow that was a little bit lighter, a little bit faster, and get you some more feet per second. So that's exactly what these new arrows from Victory and Easton are. They're a lightweight 5mm arrow. So the HLR from Victory, I took a quick peek, and a 300 spine HLR Victory arrow is going to be 8.1 grains per inch. A 250 spine is going to be 8.7 grains per inch. They do offer an additional, even lower or stiffer spine, if you will, in a 200, which is going to be 9.8 grains per inch. An interesting thing about the new Victory arrows is that this is an advanced 3K carbon weave. So it's a tighter carbon weave. I also read a little bit about the angle that carbon is weaved within that arrow being a different angle, making it more stronger, making them recover better out of the bow. Basically, everything that I've read is that they've kind of beefed up the construction of the arrow while being able to maintain a lightweight and relatively stiff relation. So that's a really interesting arrow. With those arrows, also, you're going to come standard with a Shock SS 50 grain collar. You can also buy a stainless steel 60 grain collar if you want to get a slightly more front of center, if you will. And they also make a stainless steel aluminum version of their collars in a 75 grain. Various grades of arrows. They're going to come with an Elite and then also a Gamer, the Elite being the straightest, most consistent of those two arrows. Obviously, Victory advertises that those are spine aligned. I would tell you, you know, you probably still need to Noctune, shoot those arrows through paper to get it exactly right with each one of your arrows, but it is a, you know, nice little, you know, perk or guess or marketing ploy maybe of any arrow, if you will. I don't really care who the manufacturer is. I still think you probably ought to Noctune and shoot each individual arrow through paper to make sure you find the right side of the arrow when you want to go out with it. But overall, this is a really interesting arrow. I added it up. So for my specs, if I went to a 250 spine, 29.5 inches with some of their components, maybe a different vein configuration that I talked about, one of their nocks, I could probably build about a 450, 455 grain arrow, 5mm, which should be stiff enough. It should fly great. It should be super fast. That's going to be about, I would say, 20 to 30, even 50 grains lighter than maybe what I've been hunting with the last year or two. So that should be a really quick, hard hitting, strong arrow. And I'll let you guys debate on, you know, how heavy your arrow should be. I think a 450 grain arrow that's coming out of my bow at about 295, 300 feet per second with a mechanical head that's really super tuned would be a really deadly combo for just about anything I would hunt. So I think that's an interesting option. The Easton 5.0 is real similar. Like I said, I did look at the specs. A 300 spine is going to be 8.4 grains per inch. 250 spine is going to be 9.5 grains per inch. They are also doing a 200 spine, which is going to be 10.6 grains per inch. So the Easton is a little heavier than the Victory. Easton is also offering different insert combos. You'd be able to put a 5mm hit insert, which is the little insert sleeve that slides down into the arrow. You set it at a set height, and then it's going to have an over collar that goes over the end of the shaft. That's a pretty cool combo. It's going to be 55 grains. They also are going to give you the ability to purchase and put in heavier, like a 75 grain half out, which is a aluminum stainless steel combo. You could also shoot the 55 grain aluminum half out, which is brand new for them, I think probably within the last year. That one's just a basic, it's a one piece. So it's got an insert that goes inside the shaft and then the outsert kind of sleeved over the end of the shaft to kind of protect it. One thing I would tell you just about arrows, I played with a lot of different arrows last year. In 1 year I shot, whether, you know, I hunted with them or not, but during practice in the summer, I shot gold tip platinum pierces. I shot Black Eagle focus arrows. I shot Ultra View, the UV arrows, the 1Ks. I'm trying to think if there's others that I shot. Oh, I shot the Victory VAP TKOs. Those were the four arrows I kind of played a lot with last year. I would tell you, any one of those arrows is a really good choice, really solid arrow. As far as the shaft goes, I do think that going forward, I'm probably not going to get into an arrow setup without like a really quality or a pretty decent insert outsert system, if you will. Those outserts just protect the end of the shaft. I just think they make the shaft a whole lot more durable. Oh, I also had the Easton X10 Parallel Pros. I talked to Dan a little bit about that. Dan really likes that arrows, and I've noticed watching some of his content, he keeps saying some things like, oh, do you have any problem with, you know, durability? Asking a buddy of his that's shooting an Easton arrow. I don't know if that's a jab at me or not, but I did not have good durability out of that X10 Parallel Pro. I partly think of that was because of the inserts that I used, which was the Easton titanium half outs. Those are not sleeved over the end of the arrow shaft. They just meet flush with the end of the arrow. I think that was probably part of the problem. It's probably a really good arrow. Obviously Dan is using them. A lot of guys are using them with good reports, good results, but I do think you probably need to have insert outsert system that covers the end of that shaft. It's really going to help with the durability. So that's probably it for arrows. That's probably the most interesting things. I want to jump down. There are some new, cool, interesting rests on the market. So Hamsky dropped a new version of the Epsilon, the V2 Epsilon arrow rest. A lot of you are probably familiar and have been shooting the Epsilon rest. It's a really nice rest. Limb-driven rest. You tie that into your bottom limbs and kind of set that up. It's super simple and easy to set up. The version 2. The biggest difference I can see between it and version 1 of that rest is they're now giving you the ability to micro-tune the angle of the launcher, or, you know, the blade that your arrow is going to sit in. The Everest, which is another rest that they came out, had that ability. I think they've just taken that technology and those features and rolled them into the Epsilon. And it looks like a really nice setup. I think if you're a guy that's looking to maybe take a rest and use it for target archery and art and bow hunting, I think that's a pretty cool option, because you can buy that target conversion kit and, or even just the blade now at this point, and you can play with the blade angle for target. You could set that thing back up and bow hunt with it. Hamsky products are known for being really well built and engineered, and I think you'd have great luck with it, but that's definitely one I'm interested in. Maybe not so much for bow hunting, because I do like this little QAD integrated rest for the Matthews bows. It's pretty simple. I haven't really had any issues with it, but I do think for a target archer, and there's a lot of target archers that are shooting drop away Hamsky rests on their bows now, I think that one might be a really good pick. Hamsky Epsilon version 2 in a target setup. So that's probably one I'm going to end up picking up for a target bow. There is another rest, couple actually, that I think you guys might want to check out if you're looking for new options. This one is the AAE Pro Drop QD. This is the kind of an updated version of their Pro Drop. I've never owned a Pro Drop AAE rest, but I've always looked at it and thought it looked like a really quality, well-built option. I just think everything AAE does, it's typically really well built, really well thought out. I think it would be an awesome rest. It looks to me like the difference in this new QD is that they have utilized the Freak Show, which is another target rest that they've produced, the Freak Show QD, which is quick disconnect mount. And they've put that now onto a limb driven drop away arrow rest that would be great for bow hunting or target archery for that matter. it's kind of cool in that this quick disconnect, it looks like you can get a block. So they make a Matthews QD block that you can bolt to the riser of your bow. And then if you have one of these quick disconnect rests, you can take it and just pop it onto this quick connect block, tighten in the screw, and you're set to go. So in essence, what you could do is you could buy one of these rests and you could have a couple of the quick disconnect blocks and put it on a target bow and a hunting bow. And you could record your settings for each, write it down, and you could transfer that same rest back and forth between two different bows. That's how I believe that's how it looks like it works. And if that's the case, I think that's a really cool option. And it's probably one, if you're a guy that's shooting both target archery and bow hunting, you probably ought to look into. The Freak Show rest has been around for a lot of years. A lot of target archers use it, swear by it. So check out this new one. It's the Pro Drop QD. I definitely think it's worth checking out. There's another rest I thought looked really interesting that just launched at ATA, which is the Vapor Trail Victor Arrow Rest. Back in the day, there's a lot of guys I knew that shot Vapor Trail arrow rest. And I've had probably two or three, I want to say. I don't know. It's probably been 10 years or more, maybe 10 years or so ago. I feel like everything I say is about 10 years ago. But they made a good rest. And it looks like they've produced another new limb-driven rest. It looks like it can be set up on either your top or your bottom limb. They make the claim that the launcher arm or the blade supports the arrow through up to 70% of the shot cycle. The windage, both the left and right, and your elevation up and down are micro adjustable, which allows you to precisely tune that thing. They state that they have many different blade options available for this rest, which is always pretty cool. Sometimes you don't want the big wide blades that you see on a lot of hunting rests like a Hamsky. It looks like this version, at least the one I looked at online, has a really wide launcher blade. Sometimes you don't want that. Sometimes you just like something a little bit more narrow, like one of my very favorite profiles was the Trophy Taker Pronghorn. You know, it was a little bit more narrow and I liked that. So I'll be interested to see what other kind of blade options they offer for that. Let's see, what else did they say here I thought was interesting? Integrated and standard mounting options available. So it looks like you will be able to directly mount this rest into the integrated portion of a Matthews bow. So you've got that little dovetail portion on the back. It looks like they will make it available so that you can just directly dovetail that into your riser, which is a really clean way to put your rest on. It's actually one of the things I really like about the QAD rest is just how low profile they are and how clean and how snug they fit into the riser. I mean, it's basically a seamless package. So this little Vapor Trail Victor, I definitely think it's worth checking out. I like the rest that I've used in the past. I just haven't owned one in a number of years or played with it. But when I saw this one pop up, online, I definitely think it's one I want to check out and look into. Sights. So I won't go too deep into sights because I've talked about sights before in the past, but there are some sights that I wanted to highlight. Some of them are going to be the exact same. I still think that they're probably the best options, in my opinion, that are on the market. And 2025, if you're looking for a new bow sight, it's a really good and exciting year, in my opinion, to pick up a new bow sight because there's some really solid options. The first one I have on the list is the Spot Hawk Boonie. The Boonie didn't actually come out this year. It came out last year, but I haven't actually seen that many hitting shelves in local bow shops. I did stop in at my local archery shop maybe 2 weeks ago, and they had a Boonie sight in, and I got to pick it up and play with it. The guy had an UltraView scope put on it, and I got to play with it, and it's really impressive. I mean, it's a really super solid sight, really well thought out, built. I believe it's just over 10 ounces, I want to say. The way that they've got that set up, it's like 10.6 ounces. So it's definitely lighter than a Fast Eddie XL or a Spot Hog Hogfather. It's a really nice sight. It was nice enough to the point where I came home and I was thinking, I should probably try to buy one of those. I thought maybe about getting one of those sights with a different scope housing and put it on this bow for indoor. But I would say if you can find one of those boonies, especially if your local pro shop's got one, I would say check it out. Spot Hog, again, they are known for being the most durable, well-built, tightest tolerance sights on the market. The other sight that I thought was interesting was the Excel Driver. So the Driver was released. It looks like they've kind of rolled back production. Sounds like there were some patent issues. Maybe they had to change some things about that site, but it looks like they should have those rolling into shops within the next month, I would say. I would say that that's probably cautiously, I'm cautiously optimistic about them getting sites out. It seems like in years past when they've launched those, it's been kind of slow for them to hit shops, maybe even pushing into late summer, if you will. I've watched probably two or three videos about the Excel Driver on YouTube, and it looks to me like it's really well thought out. They've basically eliminated a lot of the issues that people have had with the Landslide. They've kind of removed the knuckle buster portion. So if you're familiar with the Landslide, you would go to turn that slider knob and you were kind of bumping your knuckles against the left-right elevation gang on the site. They've kind of adjusted that, so that's no longer an issue. It looks like it's easy to grab onto and a really seamless, smooth process to dial that site. It's super light. So of all the sites I've looked at, I think that one's probably the lightest. It does look like they're making it in a Picatinny version. They're making it in a shorter dovetail version for the Matthews Bridgelock bows. It's definitely a lot smaller, tighter to the riser. Or I should say the back of the riser. You won't have any extra dovetail hanging out the back of the riser. It wouldn't allow you, if you bought that one, to make any adjustment either in and out away from the riser. It's really only got the one hole. But it definitely would cut down the weight on that site. And then they're also making it in a regular dovetail mount with multiple locations where you could slide that dovetail in and out to move the site either closer or further away from your eye. I think total weight on that, I want to say they're claiming that it's 0.8, so almost a full ounce lighter than the lightest other option on the market. It would definitely be under 10 ounces, I would say. And probably for some of those versions, like the Picatinny, you're probably in the 8.5-9 ounce version. So it's really lightweight. I do worry a little bit about a sight being that lightweight. I worry about the durability of it. I have had some issues with Excel sights in the past. My Landslide sights have had some of the micro adjustable pins within the housing kind of malfunction where they wouldn't really work like they were intended to. In the past, there's always been like a little bit of slop sometimes in some of the rails as the slider goes up and down. I've had just like some small durability issues, but I've used them for a lot of years and they've done okay. It'll be interesting to see. And it looks like they've tried to make the adjustments to this site to make it more durable. They've moved the windage adjustment, the left and right, to the inside portion of the site. They've done a lot of little things to that site that I think will probably make it a better package over the Landslide. But I would definitely say check it out, especially if you're looking for lightweight options. And they do make it in a multiple different housings. So they're going to do a single pin and a 31 millimeter housing, single pin and a 41 millimeter housing, 3 pin, 5 pin, different sizes of pins, whether you're talking a 19s or 10 pins, if you like a smaller pin. And I do like their pins. They seem to be really bright. They've got that little rheostat slider on their housings, which allows you to either brighten or decrease the brightness into those pins. I like their sights. Check them out. It's definitely one that I've been looking at them. I looked the other day and I think kind of the version I was looking at, it was about $425. Isn't cheap, but I was thinking, maybe I can put together some money to buy and try one of those out because I do think it looks pretty cool. A couple other sights, the Matthews UV slider sight. I've talked about it, but I think that is a really nice hunting sight. Really well thought out. Basically took all the things in the UV slider that people like the really, the big knob that set out to the side, the slider portion of it. It's really easy to grip. It's easy to lock down in one motion. They've retained that. They've removed the bend in the dovetail mount and basically made it a straight dovetail mount into the sight. they've given you enough travel left and right that you won't have any trouble sighting in your Matthews bows, even if you mount that in your bridge lock riser. You got a 5-pin version, 3-pin version. You also have a vertical 3-pin version, I believe, on a single pin post. The included little sight light is really cool. It's a rechargeable sight light. You basically just click a button to turn that thing on. It's got different brightnesses. You can recharge it, which is nice. For states where that's legal, that would be super, super handy. It basically has everything that I would want in a sight light or in a sight. And it's a lightweight package. It's less than 10 ounces. I hunted with it this last year. And yeah, I have nothing but good to say about it. I would definitely put it at the top of your list to check out if you're looking for a new sight. A couple others, the dialed proof sight. I've been playing with one of those. I've got one in a hunting bow right now. I think that's a really well-built sight. I've talked about it a lot before, about all the changes they've made to it, but I would definitely add that to the list if you're looking for a new sight. And then there was another new sight that was launched by B3. So B3 Archery launched the Exact Lynx sight. It's a slider sight, and I would check it out. It's worth looking into to see. I don't know what the price range is going to be on that sight. It might be potentially a little bit less than some of these other options that are on the list, but it does look like a really nice sight. Like I said, 2025 is a great year to buy a new bow sight if you've been looking. And even if you haven't, you probably should. So I'm going to jump down a couple other things. Releases. So I've got three releases here, maybe four, that I would note that I think you guys should look at. One being this Carter PPT, which the PPT stands for the Perfect Pull Tension. This is a tension-activated release, meaning you're going to set the tension on this release for maybe a couple pounds more than your holding weight. And what you're going to do is you get into full draw. It has a safety built into it, so you can hold your finger down on that safety, safely get to full draw, anchor in, and then you start to pull through your shot. And when you meet the poundage for which you set this release to go off at, it's going to fire, dump the string. These can be really good tools for guys that are battling target panic and trying to relearn the means of activating a shot, trying to get over that mental hurdle of having to, you know, push a trigger with your thumb or push a trigger with your index finger. I think a tension activated release makes a ton of sense, especially for people that are trying to relearn, retool their brain to actually, you know, shooting a bow and arrow and being more comfortable with it. You know, I went to a hinge. I kind of shot it the same way. I've shot tension activated releases and they've been really, really helpful. My own personal, you know, quest to overcome target panic. I had a really bad case of it a number of years ago, maybe 10 years ago. I'll say that. So the biggest distinction about this PPT release from Carter and other resistance activated release on the market is that it uses a magnetic tension control to set the desired tension needed for the release to fire. It says that it has an adjustable range of anywhere from 6 to 20 pounds, sufficient for all ranges of archers and abilities. A resistance release, I think, makes a lot of sense. I've been thinking about maybe getting my youngest kid into a resistance release. I think it's really easy to get in bad habits when you first start, whether you're a youth or even adult. You know, most people tell you to just pick up a bow, draw it back, you know, put it on the target, push the trigger. I think it's a bad habit to get into, and I think it can develop into some target panic. So this is a release I've kind of been eyeballing and wondering, maybe I want to get my, you know, get my kid kind of started into it, just kind of learn different habits and a different way of executing a shot. Another couple of releases I would note, the Stanislavski Soul X Clicker. Stanislavski launched last year in conjunction with Joel Turner the OnX Clicker, which is a thumb button release with a clicker. And basically the kind of the thought process is that you would start applying pressure to the barrel on that thumb trigger. You would get to a certain point where it would click. That would let you know, hey, the release is close to firing. And then you could utilize pressure, you know, actually you could utilize a couple different means of activating that shot. You could use kind of a back tension style where you're kind of relaxing, laying your thumb on that trigger, and you're kind of pulling through with your rhomboid and allowing that trigger to drag essentially across your thumb to activate it. I know some guys like to use kind of a squeeze method where they put some tension into their thumb and they just kind of start to squeeze their palm together, their hand together to activate it. But essentially what that does is that clicker allows you, it gives you kind of an audible indication, hey, the release is getting close, it's ready to fire, you know, get ready, kind of work through your process. They had such good luck with that. They sold so many of them, people really like them, that they actually rolled that into this Soul X clicker, which is the first that I can remember. Basically what it is an index finger release with a clicker. So same thing, you would set that trigger probably deep into your index finger, probably even to that second knuckle. And what you do is you'd wrap your finger around it, and then you would kind of relax your hand, your forearm, your bicep, and you would use your muscles and your rhomboids to kind of pull through the shot, allowing that finger to pull into the trigger, and it would click. And that would be your auditory cue. Hey, the release is getting close to firing. Continue through your shot process and execute your shot. And I think it'll be really popular based on, you know, the fact that Joel is pushing it. And I think it makes really good sense. I think it's worth trying definitely if you're an index finger shooter. A couple other releases I think are worth looking at. We have a new thumb button release from Hot Shot. So Hot Shot releases have the ignition release. It looks like a high quality thumb button release. I did think it was cool. It looks like that's going to come in a package that will include the ability to shoot it in a 3-finger or a 4-finger option. So they'll have the 2 different attachments where you can shoot it in a 3-finger or a 4-finger. You could even shoot it with 2 fingers. It looks like you can take both of those off. It looks like they beefed up the internal components in that. It sounds like all of the set screws have been increased in size. You can kind of like really torque and tighten those in, so you won't have to worry about those coming out. It does have a D-loop retention keeper. So, you know, you can hang that thumb button release on your D-loop without fear of it dropping off because it is a completely enclosed system. It's got like a little tab that you're going to kind of rotate your D-loop into, and it's going to keep it on there. I haven't looked at Hotshot Archery releases in quite a while, but this one does look like it's got the potential to be a great bow hunting release. It looks super beefy, real durable. I think it'd be an awesome option if you're looking for a new thumb button. One other one, just kind of take one from every category. I'm going to include this Trueball, aileron. I can't pronounce it. It's Aileron, aileron maybe. Basically what it is it's the Honey Badger Claw, hinge release. So this was real wild signature release. It's built on that exact same shape and frame. It's a hinge, but these new aileron releases have something that looks pretty unique and cool. It's got like these little wings on your index finger and the other fingers. And basically what you can do is you can move those out. You really probably ought to look at this online to get the full gist of what I'm talking about, but you can move those out, kind of creating a different angle, if you will, like these little wings. It looks like you ought to be able to set this thing up so it sits really comfortably in your hand. There shouldn't be like any hard edges with this release. It looks like it should just sit real comfortably. You should be able to use those little wings to kind of fill the voids in between your joints where they bend and kind of fill that out. I haven't actually had a chance to hold one of these releases or play with it, but it looks really interesting. It looks really comfortable. And I've always really liked the hinge releases from Trueball. I liked the HT, the HT Pro, which was the brass version of that release. I like the Executive a lot, which is what I've been shooting a lot lately. So if you're looking for a hinge, I would take a hard look at this Trueball aileron release. Okay, so I just got some random things, and I'm gonna wrap up. I've been an hour and a half, which is pretty long for a solo podcast, but hopefully you don't mind too much. a couple of things that I saw that I think you guys might want to check out. So The Last Chance, the draw board 2.0. So they've upgraded their draw boards. I think they've done a really nice job at updating them. They've made them where it's a webbing now versus the string in the older version. Probably the biggest thing that I'm glad that they did is they actually created like a cradle for your bow. So you don't have to worry about your bow falling off like you did with the original version. If you didn't put that rubber band on it and you weren't watching it, it could get a little bit dicey at times. So it is good to see that they've created a cradle for your actual bow. They've updated and made a webbing versus the string in the older version, which is what they had in the older version. But I would check that out. And here's the thing about a draw board. For a lot of years, I was like, I don't need a draw board. I'm okay. I can get by without one. I really think if you want to take your tuning and just kind of your archery game to the next level, I really think a draw board is a really, really good addition to your home bow shop. You can check things like cam timing. You can play with your draw length. It really helps a lot. So it was a good purchase, and I think this Last Chance draw board 2.0 is worth looking at and probably worth purchasing if you don't have one already. A couple other things, this new Hamsky peep system for hunters or target archers. They've got two different ones. The one I would mention is this Raptor SF peep, which you can buy in a deluxe kit. So the deluxe kit is going to come with three different apertures. So that's different sizes of peeps, which is kind of nice because you can tailor that to the way you've got your sight set up, the distance from your eye and what works for your hunting situations. Maybe you need more light. So I love the fact that it comes with multiple apertures. I think it comes with a 3/16, a 7/64 and a 1/4 inch aperture. And you could also buy, if you wanted to, an 1/8 inch or a 5/32, I believe. The other cool thing about this new peep, the Raptor SF, the SF stands for far-sighted technology. So you can actually add a verifier to this peep sight. For those of you that aren't aware, a verifier can help you if you're far-sighted, you have astigmatism, which I do. It can help clear up your pin, which is a problem that I'm having right now. My pin is not clear at all. It's very fuzzy. My right eye has gotten real bad. And this is definitely something I'm interested in. And that deluxe kit's going to come with three different verifiers to try to help you clear up your pin, make it more clear, and make it that much better in your shot, better for your aim. I'm going to pick one of these up. So this deluxe kit from Hamsky and the Raptor Peep, like I said, multiple different aperture sizes, and also the ability to add a verifier, I think is really cool. Last thing, and then I'm going to be done. I came across the other day, I've been familiar with Conquest Archery. They make stabilizers, but they are making these little time spacer kits, cam time spacer kits. So it's a little kit. They're relatively cheap, but they're basically these little spacers, varying sizes that they're making. And you can use those to help you when you're timing your cams. So a lot of times when you're trying to time your cams, you're twisting your cables. You might be taking a half twist in, half twist out. You might be working with your string. Some of them can be really finicky to try to get the cams to actually time and sync up exactly correct so that they're both rolling over and hitting the cables at the exact same time. This little kit looks really cool because you can just take those little spacers and you can put them into the cables to essentially shorten the cable. And you can use them in conjunction with each other, right? So you could use one in one cable and different size in the other. And using those in conjunction with your draw board and a bow press, you can get your cams perfectly timed. It also allows you to play with your cam timing that much more to see how the bow holds. So I thought that was a cool little accessory, something I just came across the other day. So I wanted to pass that on. They're relatively inexpensive. I'm going to pick up a set and play with them. Whew, so that was a lot. So I'm an hour and 34 minutes in. I'm going to wrap it up. I covered a lot of ground there, I felt like. hopefully it was helpful and informational to some of you out there. If you guys can't tell, like, I'm a real archery nerd. I love this stuff. I'll just wrap it up by saying, if you guys got questions, you know, reach out. Happy to hear from you. Also, just, man, go the extra mile, start diving into these little things and, you know, have some fun with archery. It's supposed to be fun. And I think that's what I'm experiencing right now, is I'm experiencing that rejuvenated enthusiasm from learning something new. And it's something that I'm really interested in. I'm passionate about. So it's been really fun to start to learn again and start to see it come to fruition and start to see scores improve. And it's been a lot of fun. And I would encourage you to, you know, get on your own journey. Do it too. Do it with me. So with that, I'm going to wrap it up, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for listening.